the point is, you think you have the inside track on everything, and it was a crappy experience.
It's the best baked potato I've ever eaten.
Was it?
Yeah. Mr. Carb Free.
All right, what else? Anyway.
We're at Nutanix next.
We're at Nutanix next. Hey, so we should introduce our lovely guest,
we have
huh?
a guest.
We have a guest, and he is lovely. His name is Drew Harris. And how long have we known each other, Drew? Since 2003, right? So
yeah,
16
man.
Years.
Yeah, 16 years.
Yeah. Days go way back when we both worked for the state of Florida.
Oh, yeah.
Drew was the dude, and I was not.
I don't know about all
so
that.
He taught me the ins and outs of the state of Florida and politics and Grant Sellers and all other kinds of good stuff.
Oh, yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Those were fun times.
Budget requests. And...
Yep.
Oh, yeah. 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 No, those were the days.
Oh, my God. I was just telling him about TRW and when you had to go before TRW and what
yep.
jerks they were. Yeah. Yeah. We can say
we're
that
sponsored
now.
Today by TRW.
We're sponsored by State of Florida Technology Review Work Group. Yes. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so Drew is Mr. IT. He has been in IT since he was 4 years old. Right?
Close.
And he's 29 now, so it's 25 years. And Drew, tell us a little bit about yourself. Sorry. Anyway.
Yeah. I guess start off with where I'm currently at. I'm currently the Senior Director of IT Operations at the Cosmopolitan in Las Vegas. That'll be changing soon.
Ah, right on. Yeah. Or maybe not right on.
Well, yeah, I think it'll probably be announced on Friday, so I guess I can go ahead and throw it out there. I'll be moving up to VP.
Oh, congratulations, man.
Yeah,
oh,
thank you. Appreciate awesome. It.
That's fantastic. Well-deserved,
yeah.
I'm sure.
Yeah, working hard.
Not based on your good looks.
No, it's not on your good looks.
All right,
no,
good.
Not that at all.
Wow. Yeah, so what do you do? So what does a VP of IT operations do for
so
the Cosmopolitan?
At the Cosmopolitan, I oversee network engineering, systems engineering, physical virtual infrastructure, service desks, asset management, and user experience.
Wow. You do it all, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So all those roles. And also VIP and convention. IT convention support, so all that stuff reports up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, like, if Steve and I were traveling out to Vegas, could you treat us as, like, VIPs and get us free rooms, comp rooms and stuff?
Or yeah, just fast not. Or just fast Wi-Fi?
Just fast Wi-Fi will do, yeah.
So, interesting you say that. So, at the Cosmopolitan, so we just went through a two-year project that my team just wrapped up on our side as far as refreshing technology.
Yeah.
So Cosmopolitan's newest property on the Strip. It's
yep.
the most recently built mm-hmm. property on the Strip. And we went through, they decided to do a room refresh. We're going to remodel everything. We're going to redo everything. So we took the opportunity to redo the technology. So we actually run 10 gig to the room.
Do you really?
Yeah. And then we have a switch in every room. And we have an AP hung off that switch and other services in the room. Right?
Really?
So on average in our rooms, you get 150 meg down.
Oh, my God.
So typically what I do when I travel to Vegas, I have this little USB-powered Wi-Fi router,
mm-hmm.
and I'll plug it into the Ethernet. I'll find the switch
mm-hmm.
and get better service than I get on the Wi-Fi.
Yeah,
as an IT VP at the Cosmopolitan, am I breaking rules?
Well, you wouldn't be able to get that to work at our place.
Really?
Yeah,
I've never had it fail.
Yeah, we run 802.1x on everything.
Okay.
So we don't have a policy built in for stuff like that. We let certain things through, but, you know, because of the guest experience, right?
Yeah.
You know, guest comes in and they have a baby monitor, right?
Yeah.
Or and they want to get it on Wi-Fi,
yeah.
right? Or, you know, people travel with Apple TVs now. Right?
Oh, yeah.
I got my Chromecast in my bag. I got an Apple TV. So you travel with those things. You want to be able to plug them in or get them on Wi-Fi. So not everything supports a cabin portal and things like that. So,
yeah.
We do a fair amount of trying to understand the impact it can have mm-hmm. on guests when they come in. So we build in profiles to account for certain things. Certain things we just, like, hanging another router off of a switch that I already have in the room, it's probably not going to work.
The other thing I do is I set my own DNS server mm-hmm. because I'm convinced that you guys are throttling video sites. No?
So, okay. Cosmopolitan... I can speak for the other properties.
Hold on. What video sites?
YouTube and Netflix.
All right, go ahead. Sorry. At the Cosmopolitan.
So the thing we do is Cosmopolitan, we don't throttle anybody's bandwidth, right?
Yeah.
So if you get on, you get whatever bandwidth, right? We're just trying to make sure you have the ultimate experience. So you come in, we have set-top boxes. You sign into your Hulu or Netflix. You can do that on those set-top boxes and get to your Netflix, your Hulu.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We don't want to interrupt your experience. That's what
so
we're trying
is to your data center all on-prem? Do you use cloud?
So we are kind of in a hybrid fashion right now, kind of like what everybody's going through. We have two data centers on property.
Mm-hmm.
And we run a 10 gig backbone between those, and we're enhancing that. And then we have a segment of resources that we kind of labeled data center offsite that's at our back office facilities, where my office is, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's where IT administration and things like that are. And then we have an Azure presence.
Okay.
Most recently, we went live with our membership identity platform and our website in Azure.
Okay.
Is that a Microsoft stack that you're running on Azure? Or are you running on...
Just pure Azure platform.
Okay.
Yeah, we didn't
okay.
even do the stack on-prem okay. yet. And now we're looking to do our enterprise data warehouse there as well.
Okay.
But, you know, we're trying to do it from a mature model where we build in domain services, you know, mm-hmm. API gateways, things like that, so we can standardize how people interface with us, and then
yeah.
we can control how they talk back to our systems.
Was there a reason?
Give one standard for implementation.
Was there a reason why you chose Azure over AWS or others?
So when I came on board at Cosmopolitan, they were going through a transition moving from Dell EMC over to Nutanix.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the things that bring me on board. I originally came on as a manager of systems engineering.
Yeah.
And so they brought me on board because they needed somebody to assist them in other aspects, primarily though with this being able to migrate off of Dell EMC, that three-tier architecture
mm-hmm.
going on to hyperconverge. One of the first things I looked at, you know, being in Florida all
yep.
those years, you know, hurricanes, when we worked hurricane season and all that
oh,
stuff,
yeah.
I mean, DR and backup is...
Oh, yeah.
In Florida, we do that part first.
Yes. You're right,
yeah,
and you pay a lot for it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We do the DR up front, then we figure out production. But so when I got there, that was one of the first things we did was we needed an off-site backup solution. We had Commvault already. We had made an investment in it, so... I did some research. Commvault hooked into Azure on the early days. They were
okay.
one of the first ones. So it's like, hey, all I got to do is set up certificate-based authentication, and it's encrypted, and all right. So
it
signed up,
yeah.
hit a button. We started back in 2015 moving data to Azure on the backup side. I was told by Commvault and a few people at Microsoft, we had the biggest data footprint for any casino hospitality group.
Did you really?
Strip. Yeah, it was like 2 petabytes.
Oh, wow.
Of stuff we had up in Azure.
So last year I saw you at both Nutanix Next and VMworld,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
You playing both sides of the street?
Well, it's kind of funny. I spoke at VMworld for Zeratos.
Oh, you cheating fool. Tell us.
And I'm speaking here tomorrow.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, I'm speaking tomorrow on disaster recovery.
Yeah.
Yeah, and backup. So, so we run... We run Nutanix, and we rent Nutanix, but I had to move to Nutanix and make sure that I could do it in a fashion where my staff could still support the platform.
Okay.
Right? At the time when we moved, we were the first property on the Strip to go hyperconverge.
Were you really?
Yeah. We were
oh, wow.
the first ones on the Strip to go hyperconverge. And so, you know, with that... There was no moving directly to Nutanix AHV, right?
Yeah.
I just couldn't do it. In the
yeah.
scope of what I needed to move,
yeah.
over 1,500 VMs, I got legacy stuff, I just got people threw dollars at it to make it work, and
yeah.
then I had to go figure it out. So we had to run VMware on top of it.
Yeah.
And so and that's what we had to do. The other part of it, and this is something that I try to impress upon my various reps and partners that I work with, is that right now I work in a space where the vendors, the application vendors and things like that, they haven't caught up, right?
Yeah.
So they're not coding their applications
right.
or
right.
building them out in AHV environments,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
I go to them and say, hey, you guys use an Acropolis yet or Nutanix? They're like, huh?
Yeah, what's
right?
Acropolis? Yeah,
yeah,
right,
they're,
right.
they're yeah.
And
I
they're not going to take
them,
the support
I'm,
call, right?
Yeah, exactly. They're not going to take the support. It's not certified. I got one vendor that's like, yeah, well, we're running VMware like 5.5 or 6.0 or something like that. And
yeah.
that was just recently when they opened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
oh, wow. Okay.
right? And so I'm asking them things like, hey, yeah, all right, so this build out for this VM, do you count for this? How many IOPS is it? Does it support this? Does it support that? They have no idea.
Oh, wow.
Now
okay.
I'm a senior director.
Yeah, yeah right, yeah. Wow, man.
So, yeah, that could be a little challenging. So, as much as I would like to run faster, I can't.
Yeah. Do you see it changing, though, or the vendors stepping up? Are they recognizing kind of Nutanix's footprint in the space?
I think they are, and a lot of them are now moving towards the hyper-converged model. At least I hope they are. What I usually do is, you know, I'll have vendors and partners come in and say, hey, how can we help you, right? And it's from a, you know, and it's either from a sales perspective, you know, they've got to sell, you know, services and things like that, and or they're just genuinely wanting to help. And I say, hey, you know how you can help me is I got this list of vendors, their applications I have to support in my infrastructure. Can you guys go interface with them? Push their roadmap. Go talk to the guys up in Reno. Go talk to these guys down the street from my property. Yeah. Find out how you can help them.
Yeah.
Because they're still doing DevOps.
Right. Yeah. Then they look at your spend and decide whether or not it's worth it.
So let me ask you, though, because you brought up something interesting there. When you talk about the folks in Reno or down the strip, that tells me you're talking about companies that are building and customizing apps for hospitality, casinos.
Mm-hmm.
So have you seen other properties on the strip move to Nutanix or some kind of hyperconverged?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So it's okay. Definitely happening in our space. It's working with these providers, these vendors. And,
yeah.
You know, I'm talking to various M companies, and I'm like, you know, tell them. So when we got ready, we did our non-gaming infrastructure first and moved all that to Nutanix, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then we were due for an upgrade of our gaming platform. And we said, well, hyperconverged is our standard.
Yeah.
This is back in 2016.
Wow.
So it's got to be hyperconverged, and the vendor didn't even understand it.
What hyperconverged was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're explaining them, and we're still doing, and I think this gets lost with Nutanix and VMware and all the big boys, but I don't think they understand that a lot of the companies that are coding things and building out solutions for businesses still don't understand how to size things right in a virtual environment.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm having a vendor that gives me a specs and says, all right, we need to build out 40 servers, and here's the specs. And I'm like, all right, what are these based on?
Yeah, right.
Show me the actual data behind it.
Yeah.
We're like, well, it's based off of a physical server build.
Yeah. Well, hold
that
on.
That does mean no good.
I'm surprised that they're still...
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, I have vendors that I can't even move off of server 2008.
Wow, really?
And it sunsets in January.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
SQL sunsets in, what, July?
Yeah, yeah.
I got vendors that can't even support that move yet.
That's crazy. Wow.
So how do you think about storage in the hyper-converged world? What do you...
I think in the hyper-converged area, I don't have any problems with storage. Initially, I used to have a problem with storage from the standpoint of the cold knot.
Mm-hmm.
Just from the standpoint of the IOPS, right?
Mm-hmm.
People would say, oh, yeah, this application's running slow, or, you know, we're snapshotting this VM and it stuns and things like that. But it's gotten a lot better in the last 3 years. I used to have problems where I couldn't even back up certain systems because I couldn't snapshot.
Right. Yeah.
Right? And now it's not a thing. I had those early pain points as an early adopter.
Mm-hmm.
But now I don't have those issues. I mean, now I'm... you know, doing essentially a vMotion of 1 terabyte SQL server and no issues.
So you said you moved off Dell EMC.
Yeah.
Are those Supermicro boxes in your data center now? What are...
I'll be nice.
Careful, Mike's hot.
So in all seriousness, though, we went from the Dell EMC to Supermicro on the non-gaming infrastructure.
Okay.
And then for the gaming infrastructure, working with the vendor that provides our gaming platform, they had a relationship with Dell. So
okay.
We went Dell, Nutanix.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. And now that, you know, Nutanix is kind of shifting away from the hardware appliance play and become more software,
mm-hmm.
How's that change how you think about servers? Does it open it wide up or...
Honestly, I haven't seen it yet, but I'm hoping it does. So I started to notice the change in their licensing model.
Yeah.
Right? As far as Prism Pro and, mm-hmm. and the licensing of the server. I look at it like this from the standpoint of, you know, it's kind of crazy, but I've got G4s now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. And I've had them, I mean, I'm coming up on 4 years now. Mm-hmm. Right? So I'm at the point now, it's like, all right, how much longer do I keep paying annual maintenance on these?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Right? Mm-hmm. To the point where it's now, it's like, well, you know what? Let's start to phase out the G4s. We'll buy the new generation of Nutanix stuff coming in.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'll take those G4s. I'm not going to fully just throw them out. I'll repurpose them and put them in lab or put them in a DR facility or something like that.
Yeah.
But that licensing model is key for me.
Yeah.
I can reach out to a third-party vendor on the hardware side, which is what I had asked Nutanix about 2-3 years ago. It's like, hey, what if I want to move the hardware support off from under you guys?
Yeah.
Right? And I want to put it somewhere else. I'll manage that part over here and access and replacement parts and all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just need you guys from the standpoint, I need support on the actual software so I can go ahead and drop, you know, AHV and Prism and all those things back on that G4 hardware. And they're like, yeah, we'll work with you on it. So they were great about it.
So your preference, you know, looking at the appliance model versus, you know, software perpetual to subscription-based, mm-hmm. is to go the software route.
Yeah, to a point. I have to be careful because, you know, we have to manage our OPEX spend.
Yeah.
Because of EBITDA and things like that. Mm-hmm. So the OPEX is not the first resort for us. We like to capitalize as much as possible.
Sure.
So I have to be careful with the subscription models and things like that. But from the standpoint of flexibility, I mean, it's the way to go. I mean, future state, what I want to be able to do is have a seamless transition between on-prem and cloud.
Yeah.
Between my, you know, Nutanix stack on-prem and my Azure infrastructure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And so for me to seamlessly be able to transition those workloads back and forth, I mean, that's...
So you were at the
keynote... That's enterprise cloud as far as I'm concerned.
Were you at the keynote this morning?
Yeah.
Okay. So you saw they're talking about Calm and Move and the ability to perform those on-prem, off-prem, back and forth kind of seamlessly and quickly.
Yep.
You buy it? I mean, it's a great vision, right? I mean, have you seen that kind of, that functionality starting to come to life within?
Yeah, we've seen it a little bit. I mean, we're doing, we've done some proofs around Calm.
Okay.
We haven't fully adopted just yet just because there's a fair amount of digital debt that we needed to account for internally and make sure we get up to speed, right?
Okay. Yeah.
Once we've done that, though, we start looking at those things like Calm and Flow. I'm looking at micro-segmentation and monitoring east-west traffic. And we're trying to do a fair amount of automation for ourselves just internally in general.
Yeah.
One of the things is that for us, I really needed to be in the Azure stack for me.
Yeah.
And it's more along lines of just a learning curve for my staff. At the end of the day, I'm not an engineer anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I would love
you're a manager
to
now.
Yeah.
Oh, you're a VP now. I'm sorry.
I'd love to get in there and start, you know, pushing the keys and, you know, clicking on things. And I tell my staff all the time, you don't want me to do it because something will probably break. It'll work for a little while, but it'll probably break.
Until I walk away, it'll work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, you know, from the standpoint of them, the ramp-up speed, we can ramp up faster on Azure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? I mean, I can't tell you how many of my peers I keep hearing, hey, do you know somebody that knows this in AWS?
Yeah.
All right? An AWS architect versus an Azure architect.
But there's always
two
that.
Different platforms.
But there's all. You're right. But there's always. But in cloud in general, there's always that, you know, the fear. And you, being a practitioner, you know, somebody who's living it every day, tell me if you experience this. But, you know, the whole. We weren't expecting the cost increase because of the data footprint to go through the roof. And so you have seen it. Okay.
Yes. Okay. Yes. It went through that initially when we started doing our initial backups to Microsoft.
I mean, okay.
If you don't have the bare minimum policy sets in your environment, the costs are going to explode.
Okay.
You know, we didn't have certain things in place. So, you know, we're doing backups. And at first you're doing it. It's like, oh, yeah, this is only $200 a month. You can retain it indefinitely. Oh, this is great.
Yeah.
Right? 2 years down the road, I'm looking at $20,000 bills a month for data.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Holy crud.
Yeah. I mean, it gets expensive.
That is nuts.
Yeah, yeah. You're looking at $20,000 a month, right? Wow. And it's just a blob, what Microsoft termed a data blob or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sitting there in Azure, and it's like, all right, this is getting expensive.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Some of those tools that I found were highly beneficial, and I think Microsoft has a ways to go on this, but things like CloudN and things like that,
yeah.
are helpful.
Yeah.
They're not quite to where I need them to be yet. I mean, for me to have to do all my analytics in Excel still.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, I'm still doing, you know, virtualization right sizing in Excel.
Are you really?
Yes. Because I can't get the data the way I want it.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
So when I had to build it all out in Excel, and I've got a heat map at the bottom of my Excel that shows me, like, hey, yeah, this Nutanix environment, this, my lab over here, I need to buy some more on X.
Yeah.
And it's more accurate than what I saw in VRealize.
Oh, wow. Ooh. Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yes. Wow. I've got a, you know, I got an issue there, right? Wow. But again, it's also a thing of ramp up. I mean, you got to go in there and you got to spend 80 hours to get VRealize work. I mean,
yeah.
To tweak it.
Yeah, it's an investment.
I
have
to do the same thing on the Azure side.
Yeah.
Right? I have to tweak all those things. And so it's an investment.
Have you looked at these tools, you know, like Beam from Nutanix, where, you know, it does the, and, you know, it, they all, every vendor has some kind of solution that looks at, like, cloud optimizations and kind of the, you know, here's your cost of running it in the cloud. If you brought it on-prem, here's your cost. Have you looked at those?
I haven't looked at Beam.
Oh,
yet.
Beam in particular, I mean, yeah.
CloudInt does that.
Yeah.
But CloudInt doesn't do it on the on-prem side.
It
so
only
I
does
actually,
in the cloud.
I actually have my own Excel spreadsheet that I still have to do to measure that out on-prem.
Yeah. But right. But Beam is supposed to, right?
I believe so, yeah. I haven't tried it yet.
Okay.
So that's one of my takeaways.
Okay.
Just to make sure I go over there and take a look at a demo on that.
Hmm.
So.
And are you doing anything on the virtual desktop side? So all this news with Frame and
not right now, not in Las Vegas. So when I was in Florida, I spent 8 years working for a federal credit union, mm-hmm. and we virtualized everything. We virtualized the whole infrastructure, right? We virtualized all the servers, all the desktops, and
oh,
then
wow.
we used Apsys and virtualized the user experience.
Oh wow, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So the whole setup was, and this was back in, you know, 2014.
Oh, wow.
I had this in full production. So we had essentially five people that made up the IT department. We were servicing all the desktops in 2 states for 11 locations.
Oh, wow.
And so with that type of setup, if somebody was working on something, like I could be working on my Surface, signed in, and pick up my iPad, sign in the Ryzen desktop and have my same desktop there and just walk off.
Yeah.
All my files were there, sessions carried.
Yeah.
I could go turn around and sign into a thin client, boom, my session pulled down. Had everything.
Yeah.
And we streamlined all the operations on it. The benefit of, you know, having a single line of business is that you can learn everybody's use cases.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And that's the key for BDI.
Yeah.
If you can't learn all the use cases,
yeah,
every person,
yeah,
right, how they interact with every application, your BDI deployment is not going to be successful.
Yeah.
Right? And we did that.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent countless hours sitting there with the accounting analyst saying, all right, show me how you're using Excel for this.
Yeah, right.
You know?
But it's easier to do in a bank. You're right. It's a single line of business. Yeah.
Single line, maybe two, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got banking, you got mortgage, or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Right? You get into gambling hospitality?
Forget it, yeah.
I got multiple lines of business.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a bank.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, I got food and beverage. I got convention and sales, you know. I got retail outlets.
Yeah.
You know, then I got lodging management systems. I got all those things.
Yeah.
I've got, you know, 6 to 8 lines of business that count for.
Yeah.
So, and then understanding the use cases for each one of those individuals within that vertical.
It's funny, you know, because if you talk to... And just as somebody who's not in, who doesn't work as an IT person, but, you know, just sitting on the outside, you talk to these, or you listen to these, not the keynotes, but these presentations, and you think, oh, yeah, that's a cure for everything, right?
But they're painting the vision, right? The
yeah.
Yeah, right.
Like, implementation.
Yeah. It was not, I mean, and, you know, we only had a 200 user base, but it still took us 3 years to get the BDI right. When we got it right, we got it right.
Yeah.
Right?
But 3 years.
But it took 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. So people were actually accessing. I had to change the architecture of how Horizon worked, the typical deployment architecture, to do it as a distributed system.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to set up ESX hosts. at local branches.
Oh, wow.
And I had to split the pools out, so I had to do a local pool using DFS and various resources so people could use that. And then if there was a problem or that server failed, they would connect back to headquarters and not know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, seamless for them. Yeah,
it was seamless. But again, being in Florida, you had to think DR first, right?
Oh, yeah.
So in the event that headquarters went down or their connection went down, they could still service people offline on a VDI.
Yeah.
But we had all the headquarters.
Man, alive, huh?
Yeah, it was great to do that because everybody's like, you did that back in 2013, 2014. I'm like, yeah. And then you get here and it's like, yeah, VDI environment, we need to decom what's currently there. We need to re-architect the whole thing.
So there was an attempt at some point
Yeah, there was an attempt at some point, but looking at it, it was like, no, this is not enterprise ready. It would introduce more harm than good.
Do you envision a day where the Cosmopolitan becomes an all-up Nutanix shop? I mean, you know.
You mean as far as like Calm, Flow, AHV?
Yep. Yeah.
I think we could probably get there. And you know, we're starting a process. Like, I have half my engineering team here.
Do you really?
Yeah, I've got half my engineering team in, and not just systems engineer. I mean, I got the network engineers here as well.
Oh, wow.
Right? Because, you know, the things that InfoBlox is doing on the hypervisor side and their insights into your cloud environment, I totally need them.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The same thing, not just InfoBlox, but, you know, Palo Alto and a few of these other players. I'm like, yeah, I've got to have those skill sets there, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we're a Juniper shop. Juniper interface.
Are you really?
AHV, yeah. We're all Juniper. So, again, you know, it's the melding. There's no longer going to be this hardline partition of network and systems. It's going to be infrastructure.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah.
So we need to have infrastructure engineers. That's just setting the stage.
Yeah.
Once I get there, then it's, all right, I start to piece in these newer generations of Nutanix gear. Maybe as I roll out the older G4s, they're still production worthy, but we're then using them to fit our use cases to move over to AHV.
Okay. So as you work with Nutanix, and I'm not asking you to call out other vendors or anything like that, but, you know, what's your experience dealing with, you know, you have a problem in, you know, your Nutanix stack. Call up support, call up your support engineer, whoever that might be, versus others. I mean, how would you rate their touch, if you will?
I would say it's very good. It is very good. You know, initially we had our challenges when we first went out on the platform back in, you know, 2016. And it wasn't necessarily the technology. It was just operations on their side as far as support model.
Yeah.
You know, I had worked with their director of operations and a manager of their service desk / help desk. Because we had a couple issues where a couple things went sideways, and it's like, all right, everybody on the phone now.
Yeah.
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah.
What are we going to do to fix it? I don't care what VP, you got to get on the phone. We need to work through this right now.
Yeah, right.
And they came back with a plan.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, this, and this failed at this point. Here's what we're going to do to fix it.
Yeah.
It's like, awesome. And, you know, and they've been great about that.
Yeah.
We call them up, and if something's not working, they're on it.
Yeah.
So they painted a very broad vision in the keynote this week, right? Anything they brought up that really resonated with you? In terms of the new stuff they're thinking through?
Really, and it's all about me. It's my personal challenges, right?
Sure.
I mean,
yeah,
so
well,
the biggest thing for me, keynote-wise, is going to be able to seamlessly move application stacks, right? That is enterprise cloud, in my opinion.
Yeah.
It should be seamless to the end consumer of the service, where it is.
Yes.
If it's on-prem, the guest that's going to come stay with us in 6 months, you know, and they're on our website trying to book something.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care if it's in Azure.
No.
Nope.
If it's in AWS, AWS, or if it's on-prem, it just needs to work.
Yep.
And it needs to be online and usable and stable. So that's, overall, that's what resonates with me. You hear things like, you know, digital transformation and, you know, digital disruption and things like that. End of the day, I just want everything to work 100% of the time.
Yeah.
It should be seamless on the back end.
Do you want the self-driving autonomous data center? Or do you want to keep your man in the loop?
I think to a point. I don't think it'll be. I'm a little worried about, was it Skynet from Terminator? So, but to a point though. So we look at it like this, and here's what happened in Cosmopolitan. When I got there, there were no like defined SOPs.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Right? there was no onboarding program, right? So you walk in and people say, hey, we got this new software, da-da-da-da-da, and there was no application onboarding. There was no understanding of where it's going to go, who's going to use it, how we're going to set it up.
Oh, wow.
Should it be architected like X? There was none of that. There's no SOPs around any of the processes, even to set up monitoring or deploy a VM. There was no SOP for it.
Right?
So we've done those things, and now we've gotten to the point now where we've matured the SOPs and we're starting to establish the runbooks. So we're getting to the point now where we are actually using things like Automate and some other automation tools to do those things automatically for us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like patching of various business systems happens automatically.
Yeah.
Automate's doing it. Or, you know, somebody may say, I'm getting ready to kick off this process for a test or a dev or something like that. I'm like, okay, they send an email and we automate the system automatically, snapshots.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? They do what they have to do, they send another email, and do a snapshot.
Yeah.
So those are the things we're trying to get towards. I worry about full automation from the standpoint of visibility.
Yeah.
Especially in our space where we are highly regulated. So I need to know what changes happen and how people access it and why.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. I mean, especially coming from banking and finance, I mean, I'm used to auditors showing up every 2-3 months.
Yeah.
If it's not state auditors, it's the federal auditors or the independent auditors that we would bring in.
Yeah.
So it was like every month I had a different auditor on site.
Yeah.
So I was used to being able to generate reports that these are all the changes in my environment.
Yeah. Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And give them 4,000 pages, and half the time they glance over and go, oh, yeah, this is way too much information, but you've got it all accounted for. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
And so you have to be careful how much you automate where you lose visibility.
Yeah.
Because if you can't account for changes,
yeah,
that's the first part of shooting yourself in the foot.
Yes, it is.
Right?
Yeah.
Hey, who changed this? How did it change? Do you understand how it worked?
Yeah.
And so we, at Cosmopolitan, we have gone about everything is diagrammed. We don't just do a deployment diagram. We do an operate model.
Oh, wow.
Right? Every application has a target deployment diagram in its current state and an OPM.
Oh, wow.
Every application. We have about 300.
Oh, my God.
All of them.
Wow.
Right? And then on top of that, and it's all UML-based. So then on top of that, if needed, we have various things that require a sequence diagram.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Right? So we do that for every application.
Yeah.
And a lot of those, that happens before the application even goes live.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
Well, you have to in your environment. Right?
Exactly. And we've got various audits that we have to keep up with. So we have it totally diagrammed. If we don't, then it's a stop. We don't make any change. We go back, make sure the diagram's correct. Do we understand how it operates before we make this change?
Just out of curiosity, it has nothing to do with Nutanix or VMware or anybody else, but was that something you implemented or
the diagramming?
Yeah.
So our previous CIO.
That was
his mandate, and we all followed the mandate because it just made sense.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's also baked into our methodology, right? So we follow a particular methodology called Chef, and we use that methodology before we institute any major projects in the environment, whether it's a pilot POC and/or full project cycle. We use that methodology for everything, and we've ingrained it into our Atlassian Jira system, right? So everything goes through those gates.
Man, that's awesome. That would be a heavy lift. I mean, can you imagine if you just new CIO comes in and we used it, you know, I go back to Infinity. We would do some of this business process analysis, and I mean, just one app can take months to map out. And
no, and so that's the beauty of us having it all in EA.
Yeah.
We have it in EA as a platform. So let's say I go in there and I build out we've got our Nutanix diagram, our deployment diagram for Nutanix, right? And we go in there, well, actually a better example would be the OPM. Mm-hmm. So I do the OPM for Nutanix, right? And I've got the actors in there. Mm-hmm. I've got the systems engineers, network engineers, you know, the application support personnel, things like that. Since EA is relational, I can say, okay, here's the use case for the systems engineer interacting with Nutanix.
Right.
I can back that up and say, all right, show me all the use cases tied to that actor of systems engineer.
Yeah.
So it's like Visio on steroids.
Yeah, that's pretty sweet.
It's a Visio database, essentially.
Yeah.
So then I can turn around and say, okay, well, if I need to change something that affects the What's the impact across all the operating models and the use cases?
Yeah.
And just click a button and it populates the whole thing.
Yeah. Now we need to go back into IT.
No. No. Too much responsibility.
Too much work.
It is a lot of work. Our staff did an awesome job, but you know, we just painted a dot on it and you know, the staff knocked it out. I can't take credit for it. I didn't.
Sure you can.
I didn't do anything. I would look at the diagrams and stuff, but
you are a soon to be vice president. You can take credit for anything you want.
That's awesome,
by the way. It's amazing to see. And you're always great at what you did, but to see that career growth and where you're going, man, I'm really happy for you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it.
It's well deserved. So.
Thank you. I appreciate it, man. Yeah, it's been fun. It's never a dull moment in this industry. So there's always something new.
Yeah. And you get to see Luke Skywalker. How great was that?
Yeah. Wasn't my first time seeing Mark Hamill, but
really?
that was awesome, yes.
You do the Comic-Con?
Yeah, I do some of the Comic-Cons and things like that. So I'm a fan, so.
Huh. Did you know he was a voiceover actor?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, he's the voice of the Joker.
Yeah, I know.
Probably one of the greatest monologues he did, I think it was Orlando. I think you can YouTube this. It was Orlando. He did a full, like, I want to say it was like 5 to 8 minute monologue as the Joker voice.
Really?
On stage.
Really?
Yeah, check it. It's awesome.
I only knew him as Biggs on the regular show. I didn't know he did, which is a stupid cartoon for stoners and kids who don't know any better. And he was hilarious on that, but I didn't know he was the Joker. That was news to me.
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, he's the Joker, man. He's done on death. I can't. That's the one I know the most about, but yeah.
So my one takeaway from today was I need to go rent Corvette Summer because apparently that was his first movie.
That was an awesome movie.
You saw it?
Oh, yeah.
Of course you did.
Car movies were big in 1978.
Smokey and the Bandit?
Oh, my favorite movie.
That was pretty awesome.
Down and down.
What was the other one? The rally there about the cross-country race. Gumball Run?
Well, there were two. There was Gumball Rally with David Carradine, and then Cannonball Run.
Cannonball Run, that's what I'm thinking
both
of.
Both based on the same race.
Yeah. Dom DeLuise. And
Yeah,
I wasn't a fan of that.
Oh, man.
And then Grand Theft Auto.
That wasn't the 70s, was
yes,
it?
Yes, with Ron Howard's first movie as a director, Roger Corman film.
Wow.
Really?
Learned something new today.
Huh. I got a Dodge Charger out in the parking garage. I'm a car guy today.
Hey, you want to ask Steve about his experience last night?
Yeah,
before
I was at this photo workshop out in Palm Springs doing this night photography thing, and I had a couple hours to kill. And I'm in a Dodge Charger, a little low-riding car. And I'm looking for spots to go photograph in the mountains above the Salton Sea there. And I find this old mine with this old railroad trestle. And Google Maps says I can get there on these dirt roads. Anyway, long story short, I'm 7 miles off the highway, and my car bottoms out. And I'm stuck.
Vultures are circling.
It's right next to this reservation, this military reservation. They have all these signs that says, do not walk over here. Live ammunition may be unexploded ordnance. So I called the California Highway Patrol. I said, I don't know where I'm at.
Ponch and John came out.
three hours later, a guy comes and pulls me out, and he goes, first of all, the Highway Patrol lady says, what kind of vehicle are you in? I said, a Dodge Charger. And I gave her my GPS coordinates because that's what she wanted. And she laughed out loud. And then the guy came and goes, it's a rental car, right?
Yeah,
you needed my Jeep.
So that would have helped.
That would have helped.
Yeah. So I didn't get the pictures, and I didn't get home until back to the hotel at 7 a.m.
Yeah. Did you drive a Jeep down here from Vegas?
Yeah.
It's a long drive.
You got a Wrangler?
I got a Wrangler JLU.
What's
Rubicon.
I like that.
Yeah, I'm loving Rubicon, yeah. She got about 3 weeks ago.
So I'm looking at the new pickup you're coming out with.
I
live in the country, and I have to take stuff to the dump all the time, so I need a bed in the back.
Yeah, I got the Rubicon. Believe it or not, I got off of eBay.
Did you really?
Yeah, bought a car off of eBay.
Wow.
All right, let's wrap this up so we can go. I don't want to edit all this.
Whatever. All right. Drew, thank you for coming on out and taking the time.
Yeah, definitely, man. Anytime.
Really?
Yeah, anytime, guys.
All right, next week.
All right.
We'll be at Lenovo.
All right.
And you can call in and give us your thoughts on Lenovo.
And then we'll be in Vegas second or third week of June for HP Discover.
We'll take you out for a steak.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a place over off
Fremont.
I tell you what, let's do this. Let's do Cosmopolitan.
Let's do that, man.
We will.
Let's do that.
They're putting us up, I think, at the Venetian is usually where they do these things. But,
okay. Yeah, it's right around the corner from office. So,
but
yeah,
we'll give the feedback that they need to book us in at the Cosmopolitan.
Yeah, do that.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to say, Matt?
No, just thanks. And it's so great to see you again, my friend.
Yeah, you too, man. Yeah, I enjoyed this, man. It's been a long time.
Too long.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we've got to do this more often.
You and I will be back on in Lenovo next week.
Maybe.
Monday or Tuesday.
Maybe.
Tuesday.
Maybe. I don't know. All right, we will. All right. All right, see ya.